The California DMV has allowed dangerous drivers with horrifying histories to continue to drive. Many continue to add accidents to their record. Some add deaths. The state continues to reissue their licenses. An investigative team from CalMatters published a series on what they found. It's titled License to Kill. Here's a brief excerpt from the series. Quote, "The cases we reviewed cut across demographics and geography. Defendants include farm workers and a farm owner. They include an off-duty police officer and people with lengthy rap sheets, drivers who killed in a fit of rage, and others whose recklessness took the lives of those they love most, high school sweethearts, siblings, children. The tragedies span this vast state, from twisty two-lane mountain roads near the Oregon border to the dusty scrubland touching Mexico, from the crowded streets of San Francisco to the highways of the Inland Empire, from gold country to timber country to Silicon Valley to the almond capital of the world. So much death. More people than are killed by guns." End quote. Joining me on the exchange is Robert Lewis, who led the investigative team that produced this report. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Robert, let's start with an overall assessment of the findings from your investigation. Can you summarize the data?
We found that drivers with some pretty shocking records of dangerous behavior behind the wheel are able to stay on the roads driving in California, very often licensed as drivers. Too often they cause fatal crashes. Very often they stay on the road even after those fatal crashes. And in some cases, they even kill again.
Well, in the brief excerpt that I read, you say that more people are killed than by guns. Can you quantify that?
Yes. I mean, the number of traffic fatalities every year in California is about 4,000, a little over 4,000 in recent years, which is more than actually are killed by guns, not just homicides, but also firearm suicide, which is a large category. So motor vehicle deaths are, you look at any local news outlet any single day, and you're probably going to find a story about some sort of tragic crash. And I would say even beyond the fatalities, there's another 15,000 people every year who are seriously injured. So this is a major, major problem in our society. It's as if over a 10-year period, every man, woman, and child in the city of Huntington Beach, California, was killed, crippled, or maimed, just to put it in some context.
So what led to this particular investigation?
Well, I think we've long been sort of concerned and interested in what's happening on our roadways. And during the pandemic, there was an increase, a pretty sizable increase, not just in California, but nationwide. And there's been a lot of talk sort of amongst our leaders about the best way to handle it. There's been a number of bills that have actually been vetoed as there's been debate about the best way to handle it. And so we wanted to look at some of these issues, and in particular, we're interested in enforcement, traffic enforcement. So much of the research is focused on roadways, on engineering, on technology, and very understandably so. But I was really surprised to see how little relevant recent research there appeared to be looking at the actual drivers who are causing fatal collision. And is there something we can learn or look at sort of systemically to maybe address some of these deaths on the road? And once we started looking, I was pretty shocked to see the degree to which dangerous behavior, if not implicitly or explicitly condoned, was implicitly condoned by virtue of allowing people to stay on the roads.
Well, this was a big project, and you worked with a team at CalMatters, right?
Right. So I initially tried to get data from the DMV, sort of showing the driving records or some basic driving history for individuals who are involved in fatal collisions. They were unable to provide that information and or wouldn't provide that information. And so you know, I wanted to figure out, like, what is a way that I could look at a large body of fatal crashes? And ultimately what I did was I put in a records request to district attorneys in all 58 counties in California, basically seeking a case list of all vehicular manslaughter homicide cases they filed from 2019 through early 2024 when I put in the request. And then, you know, we don't have a centralized court system or court case management system in California. This stuff's not online, so you often literally need to go to the courthouse. And so I enlisted a number of my colleagues who were incredibly generous with their time and really into the project. And we sort of fanned out across the state, pulling these files, thousands. There was, I think, I ended up with about 3,600 cases in my spreadsheet. And to the extent we could, we pulled like virtually every one of those files, read through tens of thousands of pages of records, and then used information sort of gleaned from those filings to be able to then go request from the DMV the public driving reports, which are not comprehensive, but they show recent collisions, recent tickets, and they also show the license status of individuals. So we ended up getting about 2,600 DMV driver reports, which ultimately revealed a number of things, among them that 40% of the drivers, about 1,000 of the 2,600, had a valid license on the day we pulled the records. So they were charged with vehicular manslaughter, and they currently have a valid driver's license from the state of California.
So that's 1,000 people that had killed someone with a vehicle and still had a license?
Today. So after having killed someone, they still are allowed by the state DMV to be on the road as a licensed driver.
Well, that sounded like a lot of investigative work. How big was your team? How long did this take?
Yeah, so, I mean, different people dipped in at different points, but I think we ended up with about maybe 8 other reporters helped pull files at differing points over the course of the year. I would say, I think I first started pulling case files in, I want to say, April or May last year. And I think we wrapped up the court case research probably end of November, early December, and sort of moved into the next phase of reporting.
My guest is Robert Lewis, a member of the investigative team of reporters at Cal Matters who produced the series License to Kill. It examines a trend by the DMV in California to reissue licenses to drivers with a history of causing accidents and deaths. So, Robert, you start the series with the story of Ivan, and then you offer vignettes of a number of other shocking stories of drivers in California. Can you talk about some of these stories?
Sure. So when you first mentioned Ivan Dimov, he had 6 DUI convictions in California in, I believe it was a 6-year period of time. It appears he then spent some time up in Washington State. He was convicted in 2013 up there of reckless driving, fleeing police in a truck while his passenger allegedly dumped heroin out the window. The DMV reissued him a license in 2017, and the very next year on Christmas Eve, he drove 80 miles an hour through midtown Sacramento and T-boned a car, killing a young man who was headed home to feed his cat before going to his mom's for the holiday. There was a guy who had 17 tickets, including reckless driving, fleeing police, street racing. He sped onto a highway, cut across the sort of triangle median area, hit a disabled car and killed a toddler. His license, he's currently facing felony manslaughter charges. And while that case has been open, the DMV actually renewed his license. So he currently has a valid license in California. I found a couple of people that were involved in more than one fatal crash. There was a gentleman who was convicted after causing a fatal crash in 2009, I believe it was, that killed a 16-year-old girl. He got his license back in 2020. He caused another crash with very similar circumstances that killed a 25-year-old woman, was again convicted. He was convicted of misdemeanor manslaughter in both of those cases. While he was waiting to start his jail sentence, he was caught driving on a suspended license. He was ultimately convicted of that as well. And just last summer, the DMV issued him a new license.
What did the DMV say about this extraordinary trend?
Well, they said a couple of things. I mean, one, they say that they have a process. They follow the law, and this is what the law is. They say there is no permanent revocation. There's no process for permanent revocation in California. And so they always have to give drivers an opportunity to get their license back. They also say that people do have the right to sort of change their behavior and be, you shouldn't always necessarily be dogged by the sins of your past, was the implication. It was the basic talking points. They basically just kept going back to, they have a process, they follow the process. Sometimes the process takes time, but this is what the law is.
In your investigation, you revealed that nearly 400 of the drivers charged with killing someone got a ticket or were in another collision or both after their fatal crash.
Yeah, one of the things I really was curious about was the extent to which being involved in a fatal collision changes behavior, right? Like, because there was, I think, had an initial immediate reaction to seeing the fact that they don't take someone's license after they're involved in a fatal crash, sort of thinking like, well, gosh, how can that be? Like, how don't they strip their license? And then I thought about it and I was like, well, maybe people change their behavior. Obviously, accidents happen. So one of the open questions was like, well, you let someone continue to drive or they continue to drive. Like, does that matter? Like, are they a safer driver? And while, it's such a complicated question as to, I'm not going to pretend that, we could fully answer it. What I can say is that about 15% of the drivers for whom we got records, as you indicated, they either got another ticket or were in another accident or both after the date. And I mentioned a few of them in the piece. One of the guys I mentioned was he killed a man who was walking crossing the street with his wife on his way to a dentist appointment. Didn't stop, sped off, hit his truck. Was ultimately convicted of vehicular manslaughter, misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter, but also of hit and run. His license was suspended, but he got it back. And within, I think it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks of getting his license back, he got in another collision. And then maybe a year or two later, he got in yet another collision. And then his license was ultimately suspended when his insurance canceled. So people continue to have issues on the road and demonstrate what would appear to be behavior that continues to be, if not reckless, not safe.
That is just amazing. It boggles my mind. Your investigation also reveals that hundreds of drivers who have vehicular manslaughter or other related convictions, they don't even appear in the DMV records at all.
Yeah, so the communication between the court system and the DMV appears to be lacking. There is a breakdown at some point, and it's certainly something we're going to look more into. But one of the things I found was that individuals would be convicted of, say, manslaughter, and that conviction is supposed to show up on their driving record. And I found hundreds of cases where the court record shows there was a conviction, but it is not making its way onto those DMV records. And as a result, I actually found people who are listed as having a valid license, even though under California law, they should have had their license suspended. So that appears to be a fairly big gap that exists that it would seem regulators could do something about.
So I'm sure you talked with the director of the DMV.
I tried to talk to the director of the DMV. He would not do an interview. Governor Gavin Newsom's appointee, Steve Gordon, been there all the years during which we actually looked at cases. He declined to do an interview request, or they wouldn't make him available for an interview. So I did talk to a DMV spokesperson and a couple officials who talked about some of the process. But no, the director would not do an interview.
Did they give a reason?
They did not give a reason. No, they did not.
The DMV also has a point system. What'd you learn?
So California is not unique in this. Most states, the way that they track dangerous or reckless drivers, or drivers they think could be a danger on the road, is some version of a point system. And California, you have to get, and everybody knows, you know, you get a speeding ticket and it's like, oh, that's a point on your license, right? And if in California, if you get 4 points in 1 year, 6 points within a 2 year period of time, or 8 points in 3 years, you will get your license automatically suspended for some period of time. I think it's actually only a 6 month suspension to start. But those thresholds are so high that what ends up happening is they're really designed to catch clusters of bad behavior and these longer term patterns that I think the records really showed or revealed are often missed. So when things fall off your record, it's as if, you know, the next time you get a speeding ticket, it's as if it's, you know, it's almost as if it's your first. And so, you know, we found individuals. I found, you know, a case I mentioned in the piece where this guy had something like, you know, he had like two speeding tickets, two red light tickets, two collisions within a 5 year period of time. But everything was spaced out just enough that none of it triggered DMV action. And then he drove 100 miles an hour, ran a stop sign, and killed a guy. So, you know, it seems that there is an inability to identify behavior that doesn't change over time and to maybe do something about it.
I heard you use the word collisions, and a listener wrote in and corrected me. Apparently, the word accident is no longer used. Everyone's using the word collision.
Yeah, it's it to call it an accident is to sort of take away culpability and to not, I think, focus or realize that there's actual behavior that contributes to these. And there has been a, you know, on some level, a move toward not using that term. I've certainly sort of tried to scrub it from my vocabulary, and I don't really use it in the piece. Interestingly enough, though, you know, it is the way it is. It is what is used even on the official DMV records. When you get the DMV report for someone, it says, you know, it lists like accidents they were in, and that includes a fatal collision that someone has been convicted of causing. It's listed as an accident. So, but yes, it is the, certainly the advocates would suggest that it's inappropriate to use the term accident.
Okay, well, old habits die hard, but that one needs to go away, so I'll work on it. But the DMV isn't the only government entity involved in this trend. You also discovered issues with the courts, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, the courts play, obviously, a very important role. The, you know, traffic tickets are going to make their way through traffic court. Reckless driving, DUIs are going to go through criminal court. The vehicular manslaughter is going to go through the court. And so, you know, one, there was some questions about the communication between the courts and the DMV. I found that sometimes when judges will put in a do not drive order, like while a case is open, those are often not getting reported to the DMV. And so, you know, I found a case where a guy got a ticket. He was ordered by the court not to drive while his case was open, and he ended up getting a ticket in another county, but nobody knew about it because it wasn't, you know, the cops pulled him over and it wasn't listed in his DMV record. And I asked the prosecutor about it, and they said, we didn't know. And if we'd known, we, you know, would have made a big deal about it in court. So, and also, you know, one of the issues, I don't want to suggest or paint the picture that everybody who causes these fatal crashes is a licensed driver. There are certainly many, many cases we found where individuals had been driving on a suspended or revoked license for a number of years, consistently were getting caught, but everything from the prosecutors to the courts to law enforcement were not necessarily treating it as harshly or seriously as they could. And so, like, for example, I had a guy who he had a 2011 DUI, got his license suspended. That suspension never lifted, right? So while he's suspended for a 2011 DUI, he gets another DUI, and then he gets 4 or 5 traffic citations. All of those traffic citations could have been treated as misdemeanors, right? Because he's driving on a suspended license, he could have faced some severe jail time, but they were direct filed to traffic court and just like a minimal fine, basically. And so nothing kept him off the road. He kept driving, and then he ended up killing someone. So, you know, there are certainly a number of entities involved in monitoring drivers. It is not just the DMV.
And some of the laws constrain the DMV in many cases, right?
Well, you know, I think one of the subtext to some of what they said was, you know, we're just the regulatory agency. We carry out the laws. If lawmakers don't like the laws, they can change them. They did not say that explicitly, but I do feel like that was some of the message, was we follow the laws. And certainly if California's lawmakers, you know, don't like the fact that there is no law that requiring, for example, them to take action when somebody is convicted of misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter, which there isn't. Like, there's no requirement. It's discretionary. That is certainly something that lawmakers could address. And there's any other number of provisions of the vehicular code that they could look into.
My guest is Robert Lewis. He leads the investigative team of reporters at Cal Matters that produced the series License to Kill. Have you told us the story of Joshua Dougherty?
So Josh Dougherty, he was, I believe he was about 19 years old, 2009. He was driving with a couple friends, and he, in Riverside County, speeding on the highway, veered, sort of drifted down to the shoulder, overcorrected to the left, into lost control, went up some sort of middle median area, went airborne, car flipped, 16-year-old girl in the back died. He was ultimately convicted of misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter. This was 2009, I believe it was. Fast forward, 2020, he's in Mono County, driving with a couple friends, speeding, goes onto the shoulder again, overcorrects the left, exact same thing, this time into oncoming traffic, car is hit. His 25-year-old girlfriend dies. Police wanted to charge him with murder, or at least a felony, suggesting gross negligence. He, I guess, had red, watery eyes. There were some questions about whether or not he had marijuana in his system. It turned into a whole thing about, like, what are their actual limits involving marijuana. But the takeaway is they didn't charge him with a felony. He was charged with a misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter, convicted again. Vehicular manslaughter second time. While he's waiting to start his jail sentence, he is caught driving on a suspended license, gets a case there, convicted of that as well, ultimately gets out of jail. And just last summer, the DMV issued him a new license, or reissued him a license. So that's, you know, two separate convictions for misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter for two dead young women, a conviction for driving on a suspended license, and the California DMV says he can share the road with us.
Oh, my. We've got about a minute left. You talked with the director of the Vision Zero Network. What was their assessment of the solution to this trend?
You know, I think advocates are very heavily focused, for a variety of reasons, on infrastructure, on technology, and all these other sort of solutions. But, you know, by the same token, I mean, I think what she had said was, you know, there can't be a license to kill, right? Like we can't just allow people with these egregious records to, you know, continue to sort of to get back on the road. And, you know, I'd also share something another researcher said, which very early on in my reporting, which I think is really one of the driving forces behind this project. You know, she said that we treat traffic deaths in this country as a given, right? Like, we talk about COVID deaths and we compare it to the number of people that die on the roadways as if it's a constant and is never going to change. But that's just, like, that's not true. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. There are policy decisions that we either make or don't make that contribute to that. And so if we want to not have so many people die on the roads, like, we could do something about that.
Well, thank you, Robert. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. This was an eye-opening investigative report. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.